What kind of a hand have we been dealt as women today, and how can we best play it? It's a large question that's always lurking in the background, and since the answers aren't obvious, I find women's lives to be immediately suspenseful and interesting. Don't you? Wait a minute. Who am I? I'm Abigail L. Rosenthal, Professor of Philosophy Emerita at Brooklyn College of the City University of New York. And while my advice has always been not to take my advice, I do write a weekly blog I call Dear Abby, the Non-Advice Column. And so, dear listener, I invite you to pull up a chair at this virtual cafe table, no matter your gender, age, convictions, or style of life.
Thankfulness. The other day, in the Saturday morning Torah study class at my Reformed temple, we were studying the verses on the ancient temple cultus, detailed, and I mean detailed, in the book of Leviticus. My patience with these memory layers of my people does not extend quite to the recall of all this ritual punctiliousness, but nobody said being a Jew was going to be joy unalloyed. Anyway, some of the sacrificial offerings in Leviticus express gratitude or thankfulness. I remarked that thankfulness had always been hard for me. I mean, I can say thanks to my Creator, just as I can thank a hostess for a pleasant evening, even if every minute of it was spent longing for the exits. But God is not flattered by my politeness. After the study hour, several co-religionists came up to me to tell me what sorts of things they'd been grateful for in their lives and how many blessings I could count in my own. I can count as well as the next lady, but that wasn't what I was talking about. In my remarks, I'd also noted that one could take it from the bottom, as it were, and, starting from zero, reckon up the ingredients that go into the lives we get to live. Doing that can give rise to a certain cosmic awe. That satisfied some of the parishioners, but did not get to the quick of the deficiency I was confessing. I was talking about personal sincerity, not awe at things everybody sees and shares. If somebody gives you a present, which he gives to no one else, and your thanks are just generic, the kind the postman deserves for delivering the mail to everyone in your district, there's something missing in your gratitude. The personal stamp. It seemed to me that if I were to get to real thankfulness, a kind of archaeological dig would be needed, digging down to some original layer of self. The overlayers must be where the politeness resides, the person who's not really me offering tribute to whom it may concern. If thankfulness has got to come from the authentic self, well, who am I? Recently, I got a clue. Last Saturday in Torah study, I was really teed off about a theme that seemed to be settling like a miasma over the discussion. I was steaming, and the odd thing was, my guidance was for letting the anger show rather than trying to keep the polish on the facade. Since this sort of prayer guidance seldom leads me astray, When it came my turn to speak, I pretty much said what I'd been thinking. I didn't say it in a polished way. As recapped below, it sounds like a coherent thesis, but in fact it was fairly raw and broken. What made me so angry was the seemingly benign theme of oneness and unity. If God is a unity, then the Jewish people, or people in general, should likewise put aside all selfishness and try to meld into a seamless whole. The example given was the kibbutz, the voluntary collective community typical of Israel's pioneering days. I have to dissent from the consensus, I said. In the entirety of Hebrew scripture, nowhere is that kind of collective idealized. What God asks of us is to become ourselves, not dissolve into the one. The uniqueness of the God of Israel calls forth our personal distinctiveness. The unity of the kibbutz, or of the covenant sign-up moment at Mount Sinai, is freely given, but also summoned by exceptional circumstances. There's great danger in trying to extend such moments by remaking the entire political realm after that pattern. Individuality will keep breaking through, and the only way to maintain the ideal of unity is by terrorizing the population. During the French Revolution, any outbreak of personal freedom risked denunciation, generally followed by decapitation, your real head getting chopped off. Today, unguarded outbreaks of candor risk social and professional decapitation. Unlike the French prototype, we have no official committee of public safety, but a similar instrument, political correctness, does the work of denunciation for racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, and whatever other thought crimes will be invented tomorrow. The hapless target is ostracized as insensitive. What is at work is not sensitivity, but the power of the denouncers to exercise control over language and therefore over thought. Sometimes when I've dissented from a group consensus, people have come over to thank me for my honesty. This time, not so much, though the rabbi's response was pure grace. With a couple of exceptions, people looked away and stole away. Lord, I thought, there goes the old popularity. I felt that what I'd said was truthful, and that the other students were grown-ups who shared the real world with me and were not in need of soft soap. Still, I felt spooked. Back home, I took out my tools for psychic archaeology and dug down through the layers. What really had moved me to talk like that? All I could see at the bottom of my anger was a loving regard for my co-religionists and a quasi-erotic élan toward the God who had put me in that place and nourished such feelings in my heart till they became full and real. So that's who I am. The thankfulness came in the same cloudburst of discovery.
Thanks so much, dear listener. If this added value to your life, I'd be happy if you subscribed. You can find me at www.abigailrosenthal.com. I've written a book called A Good Look at Evil, and if that's not too scary for you, you can buy it on Amazon. Another book is called Confessions of a Young Philosopher, and that's forthcoming soon with illustrations.